Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Hey, welcome in as we invite you to yet another new drug, Frangie Carlion La Selva, the eve of the draft. Getting ready? You ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's pick right now. Let's not wait till tomorrow.
Now, are you like, is the draft such a big deal to you that you'll go to bed excited
and
wake up excited? Is it like
maybe
that?
When I was like 13, but yeah, no, not so much now. I mean, it's going to be really exciting to see, but and maybe I'd feel differently if the Jaguars were in one of the pressure points in the top five in terms of trade back or do they take, you know, I mean, if you're a Cardinals fan, a Chargers fan, you know, I'm sure you're really, really, can't wait to find out whether your team takes a player like Harrison or Neighbors or trades back. And I think the Jaguars sitting, you know, at 17, it's, you know, it'll be fun, but no, I'm not going to have trouble sleeping tonight.
The media mock draft was fun. I thought Mike did a great job. Mike created that thing years ago where you go to a different market and get real media members from the market and have them make picks, and it was a lot of fun. I picked Brian Thomas, wide receiver. Some of the peeps didn't love it. But my favorite player in the draft is probably Jared Verse. He's probably my favorite player in the draft. I think he should be the first pick. He went right before, and both cornerbacks were gone. And I don't love Dallas Turner. I'm sure most people would have picked Dallas Turner there.
Yeah, the value is just too good.
Yeah, but I just don't love him.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. It's your pick.
That's right.
Pick who you want.
But I don't love Dallas Turner. We'll see. When I see Dallas, now I'll say this, he'll become Lawrence Taylor. But boy, I see some Kalavon in there. I see a little bit of Dante Fowler in there. Maybe I've just been scarred by kind of undersized, you know what I mean? Undersized edge guys a little. So I don't love him. I don't love him. If not Dallas Turner, who do you pick there?
Where you were?
Yeah, if you're there and it's not Dallas Turner, who do you pick? Because I wasn't going to pick him.
I don't love him. Well, again, the two corners were gone,
right.
So that's a problem.
The corners were gone. If it wasn't Dallas Turner, who would you have taken?
I would have taken Brian Thomas. I don't think it's a bad pick. I mean, we've talked about they need to develop a receiver that can grow with Trevor Lawrence.
And he ran 4.33.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's got the size, he's got the speed. It, you know, obviously 17 touchdown catches last year. So it's one of those things that it's interesting at receiver because there's a top tier of three guys.
Right.
Then Thomas is almost in his own tier because he's the only one that's being mocked somewhere between like 10 and 20.
Right.
No other receiver is, right. Which tells you there's a clear tier two and Brian Thomas is the only one in it. Then you get to tier three where you can make an argument for about nine players, you know, McConkie, Mitchell, Coleman, Pearsall, Worthy, guys like that. I want to see touchdowns scored. I want to see Trevor Lawrence throwing downfield to open guys. So obviously Christian Kirk, he'll be here a year or two, and then, you know, it's the probability tells you they'll probably move on. Certainly Zay Jones is at the end of it here. And Gabe Davis just got here, but we've seen many free agents be here 2 years and then the club moves on. So they really don't have anything in terms of long-term invested at the receiver
and
position.
And I don't love receiver there. I love cornerback there, but I didn't love Nate Wiggins. You and I had this talk yesterday. He's undersized. So I didn't think – so corner's off the board. What I wasn't going to do either, Hayes, I don't like offensive line there, and I don't love defensive line there. I just So for me,
well, Murphy was gone.
Yeah,
Murphy would have been another guy.
Murphy's a guy
at 17 that you would think,
but he would take if he's there.
He was gone in the top. Yeah, I think he went ninth.
Yeah, he did.
In looking at
Taylor,
this.
Taylor picked him for Chicago.
I tell you, Taylor Dahl.
Yeah,
executive of the year.
She should be executive. Yeah,
executive of the year.
Well done by Taylor Dahl. Yeah. So, she was awesome. But So here's why I asked the question: what if they get in that spot tomorrow? What if they get in that spot that? If it plays out, and you made the point, the media mock draft's really good because it does tell you how this thing could play out.
Right.
So if it plays out like that tomorrow and the Jags are in the situation that I was in today, what do you do? Do you take Dallas Turner? Again, I can't shake that there's some Kalavon in there for me, and maybe I'm scarred because of the fact that that Ngakoue came, but it didn't last, and Fowler, it never happened, and Ngakoue never happened. And I feel like I felt like I was drafting them again. I feel like if I took Dallas Turner, I was doing that again for the fourth time. I was taking now Ngakoue actually has some good moments here. I shouldn't say, but I feel like I'm taking Ngakoue, Fowler, Kalyvon Chaisson all over again. For whatever reason, and I think Bucky Brooks feels the same way. I think Bucky had him dropping a bit too. So what if the Jags are in that, because we're going to go through it. We're going to do our own exercise today on the eve of the draft, our last show together before the draft. We're going to actually go through some scenarios of what, if it happens, what do the Jags do? But let's start with this one. Let's start with this scenario. What would the Jags do if they were faced in the media mock draft like they would have been, like if today's numbers played out? Would it be Dallas Turner, in your opinion, if you were them?
Yes, it would be. I could, but again, a lot of that is, I think Trayvon Walker should be played more inside. So let's just think about that lineup. Let's think about it. It's C.J. Stroud. It's 3rd and 8. You need a stop. You need to get them off the field. It's 4th and 8. 2 minutes left in the game. Who am I putting out there if everybody's healthy?
Right.
Well, I've got Josh Allen, obviously, at end. I've got Armstead, I would assume. I've got Trayvon Walker. I'd like him to play inside on that kind of a snap. So who's my other guy over there?
Well, if Trayvon plays inside there, then right. That, and by the way, I would have been all over Jared Verse. I just like him better than Turner as a player. But you're
right. He's more powerful.
Yeah, no question.
And Turner is twitchier difference.
No question. Yeah. But I'll say this. I think they've got to draft that. They got to find the guy to draft that with. The other question is, what you're asking is, if it's Thomas versus Turner, which of those two needs are more pressing?
Right.
The one reason I liked Thomas is he ran 4.33 at the combine. The one thing I don't think they have yet, and I think they have to find at some point, is the really fast guy. That's the one thing. Ridley's pretty fast, and they don't have him. Gabe Davis, I think, is going to be a good player, scores a lot of touchdowns, is a separation guy, high points balls in the end zone. He'll make them better in the red zone. But I don't know that he's a consistently run by. Even though he has some long touchdown catches, I don't think he consistently runs by people. So we'll see. But yeah, we'll do that today. It'll be a lot of fun. Again, I think Mike Dempsey built that thing years ago. I think I heard him say it was the 20th one.
Wow.
So Mike was doing it even at the other stations. It's really cool. I mean, it's a really fun exercise. I can tell you this. I think a lot of people were listening. You know that? I mean, from the minute Mike started it, he did a great job. I thought the Helmets and Heels ladies, they did a fantastic job keeping it moving. I thought it was an awful lot of fun. And so most of it played out. I think Latu going as high as he did to the Falcons was high. But I thought most of it played out. I thought a lot of it was standard stuff.
I would agree. And again, there's no trades, which makes sense because obviously, you know, you need this to keep moving. It's a lot of picks to fit in a 4-hour frame. So in looking at it, in terms of the quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, obviously no one can go up to get McCarthy. So he falls to 11th. I actually think there's a chance that happens anyway. But you've got Knicks going 12. Interesting that it doesn't look like Penix went at all. So that's something. I think Penix probably goes first round tomorrow night. Obviously the receivers are going to be hot. You know, Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze come off the board 4, 5, 6. The Titans take Alt, which is perfect pick for them. Murphy, I do think, is going to go top 10, so I commend Taylor Dahl on that selection. I think Brock Bowers is too good to fall past 10, so it makes sense to me that the Jets select him there. And then in terms of how the Jaguars are concerned, disappointing to see Quinyon Mitchell come off the board at 13 to the Raiders and then see Terrion Arnold go to the Colts at 15. So I think at that point, if you're the Jaguars, you need to pivot. And in this case, the pivot was Brian Thomas, which again is the concern, I think, long-term roster-wise for the Jaguars, and they're not the only club like this. Most clubs are built for the present. But there isn't a lot of a year or two from now, what's the room look like? And you can certainly make an argument that in the receiver room, in the 27 season, how many of these guys are still here?
Right.
And I think it's a long shot any of them are. So if that's the case, you know, you need to invest in with some significant capital in that position, you know, and So anyway, it's I like where they are at 17. I don't think they need to move up. I think they'll be a really attractive player there for them at 17. I'll be curious to see what they elect to do. But this was, I'd say, a tougher model than what than how I do think it plays out, because I think one of the corners does fall to 17.
And then you have your answer.
Yeah, so this was a challenging mock because I do think Penix is going in the first 16, which obviously would then bump another guy down. This has five quarterbacks going in the first 16. I think ultimately six go because I think Penix is going to be overdrafted.
And by the way, it's not just a position thing because I would have taken Verse. In fact, I was kind of listening. And I'm thinking as I listen, I'm going to get Verse, and then he goes right before the pick. But I think Verse is going to be so good. I really do. And maybe Dallas Turner will be better than I think he turns out to be. I don't think he's as again. I can't quit seeing Kalyvon Chaisson and Dante Fowler.
To me, he was more consistent than Chaisson. Like Chaisson really only had the strong last like month of that final year.
There's some truth to that. When I look at him and watch his playing style, that's what I see.
Yeah.
I see a guy that's going to get overpowered by big physical tackles.
Yeah, I mean, Turner had 8.5 sacks his true freshman year. He then had 4 sacks his second year and then had 11 sacks this past year. So he's at least been consistent in terms of his production for 3 years. But look, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. That's the NFL draft.
That's the beauty of it. We'll see what winds up happening. All right, today on the program, as I told you, Hayes and I will go through kind of our picks. By the way, we didn't announce it on the air yesterday, JJ, but we awarded Kyle. Was it Kyle, wasn't it? Our shout of the day?
It was Kyle.
So good work on Kyle. JJ contacted Kyle, so Kyle knew, but nobody else did. So I apologize if you were waiting to see whether you won the shout of the day. That's my fault. I apologize. So Kyle gets the
Kyle had the call where he said, let's do Verse. If Verse isn't there, let's do Thomas. And if Thomas isn't there, let's do, I think, Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah, and number one, I liked all three. Maybe that's one of the reasons I liked him. But I thought he had reasons to go for going through all three guys.
Well done.
So there you go. So, Kyle, you are the winner. Congratulations on that. All right, in just a minute, we're going to do sports and courts. Brett Hastings, we're going to deviate from the draft just for a moment or two because we didn't get to this in with Brett yesterday. But the Florida State ACC lawsuit is a major thing. There's no question it is a thing. And so what we're going to do is the court, if you weren't following the story, the court asked FSU and the ACC to go back to mediation, essentially effectively dismissing the lawsuit that FSU has against the ACC, but then saying it's not over. It's dismissed but not over. They just want mediation, and they wanted to talk through it. They want FSU to prepare sort of more stuff. So I'm going to ask Brett what that means. That comes up in just a bit. Other things we'll get to today. Reggie Bush got his Heisman back. Did you see that story?
I did.
Wasn't it silly that he ever lost it?
No, I don't think it was silly he ever lost it. But the world has greatly changed in the last 14 years in college football. So, no, I mean, he broke the rule. So, I mean, and he knew he was breaking the rule. So, you know, I didn't have a problem with it at the time. So I'm not going to sit here now and say, it was such a catastrophe that they took it away from him. But I think now where the world has evolved and, you know, where college football has evolved to, it's silly to now punish him for it because now it wouldn't be a violation. So, you know, it's like anything. It's like if there's somebody in jail for a crime and then the government comes out and says this is no longer a crime, well, that person should be set free.
Yeah.
And that's how I view this.
Yeah, he got it. So he gets back his. We'll certainly talk about that coming up later on. Rory and Tiger set to get big dollars for loyalty. That's a really interesting story. We'll certainly get to that. So there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about today on the program. I will tell you, I think, and this isn't the day to talk about it. It's all draft this week. But I do get this gut, and I won't be in here tomorrow. We won't have Lee tomorrow because it'll be all draft tomorrow. But when we do have Lee Smith back in, I will tell you this. I get this feeling the PGA versus LIV and the PIF is coming to a head. I get that feeling. It's just a gut. I think it's I think LIV had the leverage until the PGA Tour went out and got significant invested dollars. I think those dollars were a counterpunch, and I think they were a powder counterpunch that LIV didn't see coming. LIV seems more irrelevant than even we imagined it could be. It is. It's more. No one.
It's
goes.
A total bomb.
And so,
I mean, it is it's Waterworld.
And I think they figured that out. It is Waterworld. And I think they figured that out. And now I think we're coming to a head because of that really good strategic chess move of going and getting invested dollars that kept you from having to move quickly. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think the PGA Tour is in fantastic shape. And again, it, even if they were to lose another player or two, it's not going to matter because there's so much talent in this sport. We have, I mean, and that's not going to change. I mean, we talked a lot about Miles Russell. I mean, the 15-year-old from here that's doing amazing things. I'm sure there's a lot of players that are Miles Russell's equal or close to it that are under 18 years old, and they're going to have their moment, and they're going to be coming in several years. And so the game is just in such fantastic shape that there will always be new stars. And what makes them stars is they're winning events on a tour that is based in integrity, that's based in tradition, that's got decades and decades and decades and decades and decades of play, of iconic players, moments that have made us fall in love with the sport if you pay attention to it. And so that's what LIV will never be able to duplicate. Nothing you're ever playing for on the LIV Tour means anything. And maybe that would change in 20, 25 years, but it's not going to change anytime soon. So, yeah, I think the PGA Tour is in right. fantastic shape. And if they do the merge, great, because I think it'd be better for the fans to have all the players mingled back in. If they don't, PGA Tour will be fine.
Everything you said is correct. The difference was before, the PGA Tour had everything you cited, and LIV had the money.
Right.
So that was the conundrum for the tour. Well, now the tour went and got the money. So now the tour's got the money and the heritage you talk about and the importance you talk about, and LIV's got similar money and none of that heritage. So we'll see what's happening. Meanwhile, let's get it back to college football just for a moment. JJ, fire it up.
Now time for Sports and Courts, legal issues in the sports world with Brett Hastings from the Hastings Injury Law Firm. Hit back with Hastings.
All right, Brett Hastings joins us again for Sports and Courts. Brett, welcome. I know we've talked about this whole FSU-ACC thing a lot, but it stays in the news. Most recently, the judge in Tallahassee technically dismissed FSU's lawsuit against the ACC, but then came back and said, this doesn't mean it's over. I want them to go back and do more due diligence, and I'm going to mandate that the two sides go to mediation. What do you make of all of that?
You know, this is really normal, okay? Especially in any type of, this is what we call business litigation, right? Commercial litigation. What the judge did is said, you need to go back and amend your complaint. He's not throwing the case out. There was a little bit of a win for Florida State. The motion to dismiss from the ACC primarily came on two grounds. One, they said it wasn't right. They said, you know what, Florida State hasn't even tried to withdraw from the ACC officially, so they shouldn't be able to legally challenge this. The judge didn't really buy off on that, and that was the argument that I was kind of interested to hear. The reason that he said you need to go back and amend the complaint is the judge felt that the personal jurisdiction allegations were weak, that they didn't plead enough. What does that mean? That is all of the reasons that the ACC could be brought to Florida to litigate in Florida, right? A couple of things that were discussed in the hearing, they said, you know, will you send payments to us or whatever? But really what he was wanting to see in the pleading, because what do we know is going to happen here, right? If they litigate this or go to a trial or whatever, you're talking about $500 million.
Right.
So there's going to be an appeal. So these things got to be buttoned up. And so the judge said, once he got in there, he goes, listen, I just don't see enough meat on the bones for this personal jurisdiction. And he goes, I'm not even going to address the real specifics legally until you go and amend it, beef these things up and put it in. That's really commonplace. I mean, I was in a hearing an hour and a half ago. They were moving to dismiss our complaint. Thankfully, the court, you know, denied everything across. But these are just sort of these technical challenges and the things that need to take place to kind of frame the issues. So that's what you should really think of it as, framing the issues. The judge did point out that he goes, you know, I also think what we've got going on here is forum shopping, that, you know, the ACC tried to file quickly in North Carolina and here. And so as those jurisdictional issues move through, I really think that Judge Cooper was helping Florida State, you know, to beef those things up. And since he's kind of already on board for the ripeness, that tends to indicate that he's probably more than willing to, you know, let the case proceed there in Tallahassee.
Brett, in terms of mediation, obviously both parties would have to agree to a deal here. I view it as the ACC has no deal that they can legitimately agree to, because if they lose FSU, they're going to lose other schools behind them, and it's going to be their death. So do you see a path for the ACC to accept any kind of deal in mediation?
I don't at this point. I think we'll see things get worked out a little bit more. You know, something like this, you might get referred back to mediation multiple times, okay? Now, is this unique in this case? It isn't. You can't go to trial in the state of Florida unless you go to a mediation first. I've been in front of Judge Cooper. He's, you know, and he's right. You know, a lot of times the lawyers will go in there and they'll say, well, we need to take all these depositions and we need to do. Everybody knows what they would actually need to know to be able to go into a mediation. But I agree with you. I think it's just too early. And there are some legal mechanisms that I think the ACC is going to want to exhaust before they would want to, you know, talk with somebody. FSU, I think, would be great, right? Because anything they would do to see the number go down would be good. I mean, the one thing about mediation, anything that's ever said in the mediation is never to be disclosed outside of that context. You can't bring it up in court. You can't discuss it just in general. And the concept behind that is to get people to freely talk. So I think that's part of what he's probably wanting too, is that you could go in there and have a number of discussions and negotiations, and they can never be devolved later. You know, I mean, Florida State could go in there and say, you know, we might meet you in the middle, you know, and maybe the ACC doesn't take that now, but starts thinking later as they go through this litigation, hey, you know, I think they'd be willing to do it for this. Maybe that makes sense.
All right, a big picture question for you. Given the fact that you've been following this as close as we have, because you've been our legal analyst on it, do you think FSU, when it's all said and done, I don't think there's any way they're in the ACC, regardless of how it lands, and this isn't a legal question. I guess I'm asking you a sports question, but I'm asking you to look through a legal prism here, Brett. I think because there's so much smoke here, and because I don't think FSU is going to back down until it's over, I think they're going to find a way to legally leave this league. What do you think?
I do as well. I think they're going to end up getting a number lower, you know,
right,
somewhere between, you know, are they getting out for free? No. You know, I do think there's a time component to some of this. If you start seeing other people, if you say, hey, our target's to go to the Big Ten, you know, or what it is. I think you'll see Florida State been 2 years in another league. And I do think what they're going to go through in this litigation, it's going to ultimately help them to try to get that number down. Because what I think ultimately will happen is, if everybody knows a little bit more, right, they work some of these legal things out, and then Clemson, Miami, and somebody else are all going to go, right?
Right.
I think they're going to go in a group. I think it would be hard for FSU just to parachute out just themselves right now. But who knows? Maybe they'll do it. You know, if they could raise enough money somewhere else, you know, to work these things out. But, you know, to go back to what Hayes said, at least for a while, I think the ACC is entrenched and can't come off that number, right? Because it's not like you can come off the number for Florida State, and that's not automatically that, you know, that Clemson and everybody else will say, well, we think that's our starting number now,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Interesting stuff. The final thing, once a judge says go to mediation, does it usually get solved there? It never goes back to court again, right? I mean, once at least.
No. It very often goes back to court, you know?
Oh, it does.
Here's the thing. 2% of cases in the state of Florida ultimately proceed to trial, okay?
Wow.
So the overwhelming majority of cases are getting resolved outside of court. And for cases that are in litigation, the overwhelming majority of cases get resolved, you know, at the mediation. But, you know, and $500 million ones or really complex like this, it's not unusual to have to go and mediate a case several times.
Okay.
You know,
that's really interesting stuff. 2%. Great work as always. Brett Hastings from the Hastings Injury Law Firm. That is Sports and Courts. Brett, thanks, buddy.
Take care, guys. Bye.
How about 2%? I wouldn't have guessed that. 2% of cases in the state of Florida make it to trial.
That is hard to believe.
2%.
That it's that low.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm curious how much Florida State has probably spent in legal fees to this point and what they will have to spend over the next year.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
It's got to be absurd.
Astronomical. You're exactly right. Let me set the scene for the show, by the way. We're going to do headlines in the 5 o'clock hour today. We're not going to do headlines now. We're going to do headlines in the 5 o'clock hour today because we're going to spend the next couple segments going through the through all 32 picks and what we think might happen. And we're sort of a mock draft of sorts from us. Hayes has put the whole thing together, so we'll give you an idea of where we think it may go, and we'll talk about some variables. So we've got that coming up. We got headlines coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about Reggie Bush, about Tiger and Rory, all coming up in a bit. You know what else? You're a Motown guy, right? You like Motown?
Oh, yeah. I'm an American.
Do you know what was 65 years ago? Correction, 59 years ago today. 59 years ago today.
That's amazing.
How good is this? I mean, if you don't love this song, A, you're not an American, and you're a borderline human, okay? Yeah. The Four Tops.
I wish I'd lived.
Oh.
I wish I was like a teenager when this
Wouldn't
music
Wouldn't that have
came
been
out.
Fantastic?
Yes.
Wouldn't that have been fantastic?
I mean, I had a great childhood, but yes. Man, I can only imagine the magic.
59 years ago today, the Four Tops threw this one up. Oh, I love this. Sugar Pie Honey Bunch. Frank Frangie, Hayes Carlion, J.J. LaSilva. Let's talk a little more draft after this on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. J.J. made a very good point. If you lived back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and you loved this music,
yeah.
which I love.
Mm-hmm. And you were a teenager.
And you were a teenager. Yeah. JJ pointed out you were headed to NAMM.
Yeah. I didn't realize our producer was a U.S. history teacher.
It's unbelievable. How much does yeah. he read?
But
he's like 21. Yeah. I mean, yeah. so he's had to do an awful lot of reading. Yeah. What is this guy reading?
So if you did come back, yeah. you'd probably have an addiction to smack or
right,
something
yeah.
like that.
It was sort of a fanciful comment that went to a very dark place.
It did.
But he has a point.
Yeah, yeah. But you,
it
you,
wasn't all sunshine and rainbows in the mid-60s.
But you quickly countered with the Flat Arches or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you never know.
So anyway, the great point. And that love that song. Gosh, I love that song. When I saw that song, was 59 years ago today, got my attention. All right, you want to go through the draft?
Sure.
You want to do? It's not really truly a mock we're doing because everyone's doing a mock. And again, I hope you heard the media mock draft today on the radio station. We heard that a lot. But let's go right through it. Let's give an idea, and we'll go quickly through some of the obvious stuff. But let's go through it. We all think Caleb's going to the Bears.
Correct.
Okay. Are you pretty convinced that Washington's taking Jaden Daniels?
Yes.
I think I am too. So I'm going to go there. Let's move this along a little bit. Does New England take Drake May like happened in the media mock draft today?
Yes,
you would think, right?
I think ultimately they're going to come back, and what you're going to hear Thursday night when their brain trust gets up there,
yeah.
they're going to say Drake May was in the running with Caleb Williams to be the number one pick all season.
Yeah,
and now all of a sudden we get him at 3. We're elated.
That's right, and I think that happened. There was some smoke about J.J. McCarthy there. Pete Prisco, we had that conversation with Pete not long ago. But I don't think that's where
it's just hard to get it out of your head that J.J. McCarthy was never really asked to go win games at Michigan. So at a much lower level of football, because the difference between the NFL and major college football is extreme. The fact that at the college football level, his coach, who everybody thinks is a genius, never really put too much on him. It's got to give you some pause. I think it will give people some ball. I mean, he's still going to go in the first round. The quarterback desperation is still very real.
Right.
But I think you got to take Drake May over him.
So let's say, I do too. Let's say it goes that way. In our medium mock draft, Marvin Harrison Jr. was next. Agree that that's probably where we're headed here?
I do. I think Harrison's going to be the first receiver off the board. I get the love for Malik Nabers, but at the end of the day, I think Harrison will be the first receiver. And again, I think a storyline in this draft is going to be the difficulty of trading really high into the top 5
and
maybe into the top 10. This is a really stacked top of this draft.
Yeah, and teams, and as always is the case, unless a funky trade happened, teams picking that high are kind of desperate at this point, and they are. So I agree with you.
I just think, and it's just so much to have to give up. I mean, you're basically giving up your 25 draft to move up. I think it's a heavy price. And I also think for Arizona, if you can, all you have to do is write the name Marvin Harrison the third down on a card and turn it in. I don't know how you don't do that.
And then Jim Harbaugh, according to our media mock draft, takes Malik Nabers. I think that's probably pretty solid, too. Do you agree or no?
I don't.
What do you think happens there?
I think they've proven that by their actions this offseason and getting rid of Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, that receiver is not going to be a big priority for the Chargers as they rebuild this thing. So I think it's going to be Joe Alt. Going fifth, I think, and again, right. I think the Chargers probably would like somebody to blow them away with an offer, but I don't know that anybody's going to be willing to do that.
Now, hang on. Let me, and we're going to go with Alt because that's your pick here. We're going to go with your picks here. But let me challenge you a little bit here. Not keeping Williams or Keenan Allen to me says more than ever you need to go get a receiver.
It's a need.
Yeah. So you think it's an indication.
They'll address it.
Right. But you think it's an indication that that's not priority.
I think.
I get it, but I mean, that's kind of where you are on this.
I think receiver is going to be on the secondary list of things in terms of how Harbaugh builds the Chargers.
And it's a great class of receivers. I mean, okay, so you think Joe Alt. Very good. Okay. If Joe Alt goes there, what do you see the Giants doing?
I think they stay put and take Nabers.
Okay. He can't drop any further.
He can't drop any further. And again, when you review the Daniel Jones contract,
right?
I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, but it's not – I mean, he's going to be their guy. I mean, I don't see them – with what they're paying him, it's hard to get out of a year from now.
I think the same thing.
I think they're going to give him one more chance. If you draft J.J. McCarthy, it's over.
And they made their bed with Daniel Jones after the okay good year 2 years ago when he did some kind of electrifying things. Remember, he had all those long runs, and that's when the league was really kind of – it's not like the league started turning to the running quarterback then, but that was almost a height of it, wasn't it, 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That was almost a confirmation in the minds of some, okay, this is what we're gonna let our quarterbacks run now. Didn't you sense that?
Yeah.
Two years ago is when that sort of started to become really a thing.
And again, if you're the Giants, if you take J.J. McCarthy, you've told your starter who you're paying a ton of money to, who you can't get out from under, that basically at some point this season you're being replaced.
Okay, then so we'll go Nabers there. The Tennessee Titans are next up, again, on our media mock draft today. They took Alt off the board here, so what would you think?
I think this is going to be the first curveball of the draft because I'm surprised no one has this coming. I think the Titans take Brock Bowers.
Okay.
I just think he's too good. He's too clean. You've got Will Levis. You're trying to build something there.
I like this.
I think it's Bowers to – I don't want to see it because I'd hate for him to be in the division. But I think Brock Bowers goes seventh to the Titans.
I love that. I love that. And then the Falcons, in your mind, would then do what?
I think the Falcons are going to take Byron Murphy. I think the edge is certainly appealing with Verse, Latu, and Turner available, but I think Byron Murphy is really one of one in this draft class in terms of his ability to create pressure from the interior. I just think it's going to be too much for Atlanta to turn down.
In our media mock draft, D. Orlando Ledbetter, who Mike and Tony have gotten to do this many years from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, said they took Latu, the pass rusher from UCLA. You think Byron Murphy, according to our media mock draft, Taylor Dahl from our staff, who picked for the Bears both times, had Murphy at 9, which I like, by the way, if he's there.
Right.
I think
it's a great pick if he's there.
And it's the probable pick that he's there. According to your mock or our mock for our show, he's not there. So what do you think the Bears do?
I think they take Odunze and the third of the three great receivers
the
board at 9.
The final weapon.
Yeah.
That's a value pick almost more than anything else.
Yeah, and you pair him with Caleb and DJ.
But that's where your value is now,
And
remember, they already have, to your point, they went and got DJ Moore.
Right.
People tend to forget, with all the smoke around Fields in the first pick and getting rid of Fields, who, by the way, the Steelers did not do the fifth-year option. I thought that was surprising, being that Russell Wilson's on a one-year deal. That's a conversation for another day. But so now you got DJ Moore and Odunze, in your mind, catching passes for Caleb Williams. That's a team, Hayes, that could get better fast, couldn't it?
I absolutely think Chicago has a chance to be a wild card team if the draft falls this way. I mean, obviously, we know they're going to have Caleb Williams, and I think he's going to be good. And I do think that they've done a much better job with the infrastructure that he's going to have.
Right.
Compared to what Justin Fields had. So, yeah, I think absolutely Chicago's a team to watch, in my opinion.
One more pick, and then we'll go to break. So the Jets in our media mock draft today took Bowers. Obviously, he's now not there on your draft. So let's complete the top 10 before we go to break. What do the Jets do?
I think the Jets here have to address offensive line again. Their 40-something-year-old quarterback is coming off a torn Achilles. So I like Olu Fashanu, left tackle out of Penn State. To be a Jet.
Yeah, so so two offensive tackles go in the top 10, according to Hayes Carlin. Listen, I like this. Yeah, I like this. This is sort of our about the Hayes mock tells you what do the Jags wind up with now. We see who's – here's what I'll tell you in the Hayes mock so far. Both cornerbacks still on the board. Jared Verse still on the board. Brian Thomas still on the board. So
Dallas Turner.
Dallas Turner still on the board as we get to 11. We'll take a break. But and Hayes has somebody slated at 17. If you're wondering who it is, you better don't touch that dial. You know what they said back in the old days? Do they still they don't have dials anymore. We need dials back.
We do. Just so you can keep
say
the phrase.
Just so you can say don't touch that dial.
Agree. Maybe a t-shirt.
This is 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on The Frangie Show. Ricketts Electric, the power connection you can trust.
You can call my friend Zach Ricketts, all the folks at Ricketts Electric at 904-320-5960. They were out at my house this week. They fixed all kind of stuff for us. He brought the crew out. Didn't take long at all. They are really good electricians and good folks as well. Ricketts Electric, always a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on the program here. We've gone through Hayes' mock. We've gone through the first 10 picks. Let's pick it up at number 11 in our media mock draft today. J.J. McCarthy went there. He's still on the board here. What do you think?
I think that's what happens. I think the Vikings are rewarded for being patient. I think if they can just stick to their guns, I think McCarthy's going to be there for him at 11, and I think it's a great pick for him.
I do, too. It's clear Kevin O'Connell is a quarterback's guy. He made his bones that way. He was a very respected quarterback coach all over the league before he became a head coach. Known more that as that, Hayes, than as he was a coordinator. And all the talk is he wants his guy. He wants to bring – listen, you can do worse things than get a head job and inherit Kirk Cousins, okay? That's pretty good. But now that that's over, this is a guy you got to believe wants his guy. So I think that makes all the pick in the world. The Broncos are next up. Our media mock draft had them going quarterback too with Bo Nix. Mind you, they just traded for Zach Wilson. What do you see here?
Yeah, I agree. I've got Bo Nix going to Denver as well. Again, I think Sean Payton's going to really like the experience. Bo Nix obviously has played a ton of football, was incredible this past year. So you've seen his production really spike the last 2 years at Oregon, and Denver's got to figure out something. So I think they take a swing at Bo Nix.
By the way, this is off the beaten path, but I saw this in the Belichick Andy Reid story when it referenced Belichick the other day. You realize Sean Payton's making $24 million?
Oh yeah, it's ridiculous.
Sean freaking Payton.
Yeah,
is making $24 million.
It's a gargantuan amount of money.
He's a good coach.
It really did reset the market. Now again, at the time he had a lot of leverage.
Yeah,
he'd left New Orleans as a winner. New Orleans has sort of floundered without him. He's known as a quarterback's guy, which is obviously ownership is always going to be excited
about.
That's
a lot of money, though.
And I think Denver, I honestly think they were like, we're new owners. We want to throw our weight around a little bit.
Yeah.
And we own Walmart. So
we have the money.
We'll pay them whatever it takes. Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. The Raiders are 13th in your draft, our show mock draft. In the media mock draft, here's where the run on cornerbacks began. Quinshon Mitchell, the cornerback from Toledo, said the media mock draft. He's available. What do you think?
I think the Raiders have to go quarterback here as well. I just don't think they can wait. So I've got the Raiders taking Penix.
Okay.
I think they've got Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. It's just not going to be enough. In that division with Justin Herbert, obviously the king, and Patrick Mahomes. And, and we'll see what Sean Payton can produce, but Denver at least has the right coach in terms of producing strong quarterback play. So I think the Raiders, I'm sure they're not going to love that this is where it is. I say that. I mean, they'll be excited about Penix, but I think any hope that they have of waiting until the second round with five already gone, I think they've got to go ahead and bite the bullet and take Penix.
If the Jags are thinking the way we think they're thinking, then that's really good news compared to our media mock draft, because that means both cornerbacks of note are still on the board as you get to pick number 14. In the media mock draft and pick number 14, our friend Matt Moscona made the pick from ESPN Baton Rouge. He picked Fashanu, the offensive lineman from Penn State, who's now gone in our draft. Mm-hmm. Who do you like here?
I like Troy Fa'utanu out of Washington. The Saints are desperate for offensive line
same
help.
Same position.
And so he can play I mean, he's probably going to play tackle for them, but he could play help them wherever they'd like. He's the most versatile offensive lineman in the draft. So, again, I was really surprised that Faiutano did not get selected in the media mock draft because I've seen him be as high as, you know, a top 10 overall talent. So I think here the floor is 14.
Okay, now here's where we are. Colts, Seahawks, and Jags are next. If on your value board, like on my value board on the media mock draft today, if the top three players are Arnold, Mitchell, and Verse in any order, you're now going to get one of those.
Yeah, you'd have been happy.
I wasn't so lucky today, okay?
You weren't.
I would have been happy because those were the top three players on my board for the Jags, and I was pretty confident I was going to wind up with one of those. Turned out all three were gone in the media mock draft. They're all three available now as we get to 15. Matt Taylor, my good buddy, who's the play-by-play voice of the Colts, had them taking Terrion Arnold at 15. What do you think?
I could certainly see that, but I think they go Dallas Turner and stop the fall. I think they'll look at it and say, C.J. Stroud's in this division, Trevor Lawrence is in this division, we'll see what Will Levis becomes. I don't really think
the
Colts...
So you like him more than Verse?
No, I like Verse.
But you think they'll like Turner more?
But I think they'll like Turner more.
Okay.
And so I do have Verse available, but I think Turner will be the first edge player off the board.
All right, now it's about to get interesting. In the Hayes Carline draft, which is representing our show, Seattle is next up. In the media mock draft, they took Jared Verse. I don't know if they would have taken Quinshon Mitchell, but he was off the board. I don't know if they would have taken Terrion Arnold. He was off the board. Both are on the board here, as is Verse. What do you have the Seahawks doing?
I have the Seahawks taking Terrion Arnold, corner out of Alabama.
All right. Terrion Arnold, why?
He fits, I think, and they've got a new philosophy. Pete Carroll is going to be tough to replace there. It's not just taking over as a new head coach. It's taking over a culture that was unique and had an incredibly high level of success, a championship pedigree. I think, and obviously it's a general manager, John Schneider, that's the same. And I think in doing that, they're going to look to build how they've built before. And they'll look at corner, and to get the first corner off the board, Terrion Arnold. The corners didn't run as well as maybe people were expecting, but still, it's hard to believe that the first corner doesn't come off the board here as we hit the midway point of the first round.
All right, JJ, have the applause ready because the Jaguars have made it to the they are on the clock in the Hayes Carline draft. You have got Quinshon Mitchell available. You have Jared Verse available. You have Brian Thomas available. I think you have C.J. Henderson, Taven Bryan, and Kalavon Chase.
Is Chenault still
all
available?
Chenault is available. But with the Jags, with the 17th pick in the 2024 Hayes Carline mock draft, who do you like and why?
It's Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. They've absolutely got to improve the corner spot opposite Tyson Campbell. He obviously had a brilliant draft process. He was probably the best player in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. So while you've got small school concerns, you've seen him perform at a very high level against players that are going to be drafted. So I think Quinyon Mitchell would be the perfect fit for the Jaguars. The board obviously falls very nicely for them here in getting Mitchell.
All right. How close did you come when you did your mock and you saw that both Mitchell and Verse were there? Did it give you pause at all?
Yeah, because I would take Verse.
I would take Verse there. If I did mine today,
yes.
If I had done my media mock draft again, the media mock draft has instructed to me was pick who you would take, not who you think they're going to take.
Right.
And I would have taken Verse too. But so you had some pause.
Yes.
You would take Verse, but you think the Jags go Mitchell.
Yes,
Given this scenario.
I think given this scenario, I think the Jaguars, in looking at it, will go corner if Mitchell or Arnold are there. And in this case, I think it's even I think they're popping champagne if Mitchell is on the board. And I think there's a good chance he will be.
All right, we won't go all 32 picks, but I will have you do the last three to get us to 20 before we go to the break. Quinshon Mitchell's the big news. Hayes has him coming to the Jaguars. The Bengals are 18. Who do you like?
I think they race the card up for Jared Verse.
I mean, pull a hamstring. I think he is such a good – I tell you, he's my favorite player in the draft. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be an outstanding pass rusher. The Rams are at 19.
They take J.C. Latham, the tackle out of Alabama.
Okay, three tackles and going in the top 19. And finally, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Take Brian Thomas, receiver out of LSU.
And he would fit them perfectly because that's one more receiver is what they would like for Russell Wilson. So there you go. Great work by Hayes Carline. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're not going to go through the rest of the picks. I wanted to see how we got to 17. We got some other things to talk about in the world of football and a whole lot more. We've got Hayes headlines coming up in about 20 minutes. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Ricketts Electric Wednesday on The Frangie Show. Ricketts Electric, the power connection you can trust.
In a good mood. I'm kind of a good mood guy anyway.
Yeah.
I tend to be a good mood guy.
Yeah.
You know?
I get nervous if, like, you're not in one.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
like
a good mood guy. I tend to be
there. Count on one hand how many times I've seen you kind of bummed out.
But we got the draft. We're excited. It's beautiful weather out there. I'm excited about tomorrow.
JJ's in the zone when it comes to playing music.
He's always in a zone. He got locked in today, didn't he?
Yeah, but this week has been.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think he stepped it up a
little bit. An exceptional week.
Well, he's new to the show. He had to find himself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to find yourself. Yeah. You get drafted.
He's 6 under through 8.
Right. I think he's found himself here.
I think finally getting my loser Monday bonus really helped.
The bonus changed the world, didn't it? Oh, goodness. Good to hear that. Let's get – JJ, you got anything to give away?
Yes, we do, actually.
What do you
got? I have a pair of tickets to see AEW Collision and Rampage 27th. That's this Saturday at Daly's Place. So what caller do you want to get
How
to?
About three? Caller three. I love
Let's
that. JJ always – anytime I want to give something away, JJ can dig something up.
641-1010?
641-1010. Caller three. You're going to see AEW this Saturday on the 27th. All right, we talked about the draft. We'll get more of that coming up a little bit later on, I suppose. We've done a lot of draft talk throughout the course of the day on the radio station today. A few other things that are going on in kind of the world of sports. By the way, this guy, Rush Probst.
Yeah,
what a legend.
So I mean, is he like still – like he's – where is he coaching now?
It's a great question.
I think it's Pell City, Alabama.
Okay.
Pell City.
Okay. The metropolis
is. Yeah. So, I mean, I've lost track. How many families? Is he still just two families?
I think it's just two.
Did he have a third yet?
Yeah.
So it's two families. Okay.
I mean, this is such a movie waiting to be made.
Yeah. I think it's two families. Is he –
It's definitely two families.
I'm saying, is he expanding?
Yeah, well, that was like 15 years ago, so he might be
four.
You never know.
This guy apparently is just an awful guy.
Right.
I mean, he had the one family, right, and then he started the next family.
Yeah.
And so he had the two families.
And kept the other family secret
something. But then he'd win all the games.
He's a great coach.
He was at Hoover. He was at Valdosta. Now he's at Pell City, wherever that. He was at some other place in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the latest story that –
I guess there was a petition.
Rid of him?
It almost looks like something out of Hoosiers.
Maybe
when you
he's got
see
a fourth
video.
Or fifth family or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
And so there was a resolution to get rid of him, and the resolution failed. And so the crowd like all starts cheering because they're keeping their football coach.
Did Jimmy
wins
show up?
I didn't see him, but it does make you wonder if the quarterback said basically, Coach stays, I'll play.
Unbelievable. So Rush Probst gets to stick around. What a bizarre story. To the FSU thing for a minute, I appreciate Brett Hastings stopping by and giving us a little bit about that. You and I differ on this. You think they're going to have trouble getting out of there. I think they're out. I think somehow they'll get out.
I think Florida State is going to get out. I certainly don't think they're going to be held to the ACC until 2036. But I do think it can be painstakingly slow because I just don't think that the ACC is motivated to break up. And so I think the ACC is going to exhaust every legal argument that they can and drag out mediation as much as they can because they don't have a positive existence once FSU leaves.
Yeah.
Because again, if FSU leaves, North Carolina is leaving, Clemson is leaving, Virginia is probably leaving. So the ACC is going to be crippled in what it can do. So that's why I think Florida State gets out, but the ACC is never going to be able to
agree
to any kind of compromise.
Yeah, I know. I agree with it. I just think that eventually what FSU is trying to do isn't rocket science here. They're trying to wear them down. They've said, listen, we don't want to be at your party anymore. We appreciate the invite to the party, and we've enjoyed the beer and the popcorn and the nachos, but we're now ready to leave. And I know we agreed to stay till midnight, and it's only 9:30, but we don't want to be here anymore. And so no matter what we agreed to, we might as well sit down and figure out what's the best exit strategy for all involved because we don't want to be at your party anymore. And I know it's more complicated than that. the legalese.
Take it from me. The beer at this party sucks.
Yeah, right. And so, well, and you would know, right?
Yes.
So you would know.
What? I mean, Miami, I think, is really fascinating,
well,
too.
And it
We're
is.
So lucky that Florida State's falling on the sword.
That's exactly. Yeah, because I think, well, certainly Florida State will certainly help Clemson get out. Then it gets interesting because Miami's more of an FSU-Clemson story, whereas the Tobacco Road teams have far more heritage in the league. Clemson does, too, but it's a different kind of heritage. But I just feel like at some point, the fact that FSU wants out so badly, and possibly Clemson and Miami too, and whoever, North Carolina, whoever else, that the at some point the ACC is no longer trying to keep them in. I don't think the ACC is trying to keep FSU in. I think the ACC is trying to get as much possible money as they can during the exit that I think everybody knows is inevitable. I guess that's the point, Hayes. I guess to me, this is inevitable. It just comes down to at what price. And I think the inevitable is within the next year or two. I don't necessarily think that FSU is in a new league in 25. I did think that at first. I now think everything you're hearing, everything you read, that it might be closer to there might be two more years. But it's an ugly existence. Even at the meet, I mean, these are still human beings. And when the presidents and ADs meet in the conference room in Amelia or wherever, there's got to be some tension and pissiness, doesn't there?
Absolutely.
You'd have to believe that.
Yeah, and without a doubt, I think for the ACC, I think the strategy is going to be, can we prolong this enough that we have them for the 27 football season? I mean, that's what this is. I mean, I think if you work in the ACC office on an individual level, your goal is, can we prolong this demise enough so that I can figure out where I'm going next?
Right.
You know, and if you're close, if you're 3 years away from retirement, you're like, can I get one more year out of this league? And then, you know, and then I'm gone and I ride off into the sunset. And I mean, I think that's where it's gone. There's no doubt the ship is sinking. The ship is hit an obstruction and the ship is going down and no one is going to get to you in time to save you. So everyone is going to hit the ocean. It's just a question of who's going to be on the best lifeboats and who's not going to get a lifeboat. But the conference, as it stands, is a sinking vessel in the middle of the ocean, and no one is coming to help it.
Right. But having said that, the conference is going to exist. Now, it may even look like a group of five, but I think the conference is going to exist. So what's the best? I think it's going to exist. And in addition to existing, Hayes, I think it's going to – it's going to exist at a much less level. So what do you – I guess the question is, then what do you do? I guess that's where I'm kind of going with this. Then what do you do if you're the ACC? Get as much money as you can, because I don't think that the money grab of going and getting Stanford and Cal and SMU, that was almost – that might have been the silliest procurement of all of them. I think
– It was.
I mean, it was the – I mean, when the Big Ten went and got – UCLA and USC, and then later in Washington and Oregon, at least you got why. You know, it's geographically it seemed gross,
right.
But you understood why.
But you got power.
You get power, football-watching power in markets. You understood why. When the SEC went and got Texas-Oklahoma, it fit both geographically, if you stretch a little bit, but certainly from a power
it
standpoint.
It was the ultimate.
Yeah.
Because you got power and you got geography.
And even the Big 12, which was wounded, I understood what they did, both waves. The first wave, when you went and got Houston, Cincinnati, BYU, and UCF, let's go get the best four programs that aren't in a league. And then the second wave, let's go pick off the Pac-12 teams because they're sinking. So both Big 12 moves I understood. The Big 10 move, which seemed weird, but I got it. And the SEC, you ultimately got it. The ACC is the one that I don't get. Why do you – Stanford, Cal, and SMU – it just makes – I mean, they're wonderful academic schools, but it's not an academic conference. That's not what it is.
Right.
It's an athletic conference. And so that one made the less sense to me. The answer could be they had no other choice. But I don't know. That one for the – and we've all – I'm saying this ad nauseum because we've all had this conversation 1,000 times. But the angst you're putting the rest of your tennis team through in the in the Olympic sports – I just can't see where that one made any sense.
It didn't make sense other than the fact that they've got to maintain a certain level of membership of schools to keep their TV deal intact. So I think that's what they're going to continue to try. And I think at some point, and yeah, I'm a little surprised it hasn't already been threatened more, but I would think at some point, once FSU and Clemson and North Carolina are out and whoever else leaves, the ACC may find enough members to replace them. They may go get Tulane and Memphis and South Florida, whoever it is, to get to their threshold of teams to keep that contract going. But if I was ESPN at that point, I'd be like, well, we're killing the deal because, yes, you're still in compliance of it, but no one wants to watch these teams, so we're out.
A related story, Group of Five administrators, get this, have had preliminary discussions in recent months about a Group of Five-only postseason playoff or even wide-scale Group of Five realignment, so we'll have a Group of Five champion. So here's your question. Number one, I think it's a dumb idea because I think you're sending the world, let me tell you how small we are.
Right.
You're sending out a smoke signal, hey, look at us, so we can tell you we're small.
Right.
But, I mean, I wouldn't do this just for the sake of getting the one team into the 12. I think one team in the 12 is better than having this, even though that's only one team. What do you think? What do you think of the plan? Or at least a concept. It's not even a plan yet. It's a concept.
I think it's a bad concept. Did I see this right? That Derek Dooley is the one?
He's the coordinator.
Okay. Well, that's a bad sign. Let's start with that.
Yeah, but it may tell you, it may speak volumes.
Yeah. So,
does he have the striped pants on? Does he have the Tennessee, the orange and white
does
stripes?
Does this plan have shower discipline? Because his Tennessee team didn't, apparently,
it did not,
according
to
what he said.
Yeah.
I think it's silly. I mean, this is probably where this sport is going, but why would you get there before you have to if you're these, pardon the, minor schools?
But because you're telling the world you're small,
right?
And maybe you're admitting it. And
I think it's a fine idea once the SEC and Big Ten have decided to do whatever they're going to do in terms of this is the highest structure of Division I college football. So, but that's got to happen first, and then from there you can figure out, the trickle down effect of what the next level is going to look like, and so forth. It doesn't make sense to go bottom top and introduce something like this.
Yeah.
What is Derek Dooley even doing?
I don't even know. Well, this.
I
don't know where he coaches. I don't. I just think that, I will say this. Let me say a serious note about this, Hayes. In fairness to some of these schools, what do you do if you are a MAC school or you are a Sun Belt school or a Mount or even the American? I mean, what do you do? What do you do if you're USF? USF is not a great football program, but it's in a gigantic, wonderful market. It's a good school. It's desperately tried to keep up with UCF, who got over the wall. UCF got over the wall before, and USF couldn't come with them. So if you're USF, what do you do? Do you just sit and wait? Do you hope that one day you're the one team that makes the 12? Because the odds are it's not happening anytime soon. And by the way, USF actually has some promise in his program. This guy, Alex Golish, is a really good coach. Now, they may not have him long, but he's a very respected coach. They're building a beautiful new $400 million football stadium, so they wanted to play in the Buck Stadium. So there's some momentum in the – Michael Kelly, the AD, is a smart guy. Remember, he put the Super Bowl on here. So there's some momentum in the program, but what do you do if you're USF?
I would think USF has a chance because I would think being in Tampa, the NIL resources are plentiful. I know they don't probably have a deep alumni base in terms of third generation, fourth generation
That's
wealth,
correct.
But in terms of just being in Tampa, I would think that would be a way to build, a reserve of $4 or $5 million in NIL for your football team, which doesn't compare to the heavyweights, but probably gives you. Like they need to do
a chance
what,
to compete at this level.
What Memphis just got in terms of getting the $5 million a year for 5 years from FedEx.
Yeah.
Like USF has to find some Tampa companies
that
would be willing to help them with that.
Yeah. You and I have learned through conversations we've had, and I didn't know this, by the way, until you and I kind of learned it together, that for the big schools, for the Blue Bloods, $20 million is sort of the annual NIL goal. And I didn't know that. I don't think you did either. I think we kind of learned that together.
And I'm sure in 3 months that goal will be higher.
And it could be, but
it's an arms race.
But the big right. But the Alabamas, the Georgias, the Floridas, the Texas, they would like to get to 20 million. About 60% of that's going to go to football. About another 20% is going to go to men's basketball, and then the other sports get the other 3-4 million. And I didn't know that until we've had a lot of conversations about it. So the USFs of the world are never headed there, but can they get? To your point about Memphis, can they get to 5 to 8 million in NIL money to allow them to compete in basketball or whatnot? So the whole thing's interesting to me. Isn't it interesting that college sports keep changing so dramatically? There's always change in the world. The banking industry's changing. The legal industry's changing. The hospital, the healthcare industry's changing. Everything always changes because people are trying to find a better way to do it. I get that. But the college football world is changing so significantly every year. Isn't it kind of astounding to you?
It is astounding. To me, it would be the equivalent of in 1987, the NFL deciding in a 18-month period to introduce free agency, blow up the rookie draft structure of not giving the first overall pick $70 million,
right.
and expanding and creating all new divisions.
Right.
I mean, you would never do that in an 18-month plan. Right. That'd be way too much change.
Right.
Here, that's what you've seen in college football. Everything has changed dramatically from how you get players to conferences that you're playing in to the playoff structure. It's all radically different. In fact, I mean, what's the most stable thing in college football? I don't know that there really is anything other than, you know, you can't get up if you fall down and you're down. I mean, the rules of the game have kind of stayed the same.
The only thing that
except the 2-minute warning and the first down.
I don't need a 2-minute warning in college football. That one, but I don't know why that one annoys me as much as it does.
Yeah.
That one annoys me. The only thing that stays the same in college football and college basketball is the thing that matters most. The elite remain the elite.
Right.
That's the one thing that doesn't change is the power schools. Now they may change places. You know, Florida moved out of the way and Georgia's now there. USC moved out of the way and Ohio State's there. So they may change places in the hierarchy, but the group that changes places, that's the one thing that doesn't change in either sport.
Yeah, and I'd say the passion is still there. I mean, I think the enthusiasm for the sport is still there, and I think is going to increase because I think the 12-team playoff is going to be an extravaganza. I mean, I think the public is going to absolutely love it. So, you know, I think in looking at the sport and the health of the sport in terms of fans, I think it's at a high level, and I think that level is going to increase. And I do think that fans are going to come around on the NIL component of it. I think the portal – they need to get a more of a regulation on, and I think that'll come in future years when they really get to the negotiating table. But I think other than that, I think people still really care about college football. I think, you know, they can't wait. Florida fans can't wait to see the Canes roll in week one. I think Florida State fans can't wait to, you know, see Clemson come in
and
in the middle of the year.
And that's as passionate as ever.
And Georgia and Clemson are going to, you know, kick off their seasons. I mean, I think everything there is still white hot.
Well, and not only that, but to that end, that is what has fueled the economics of it. Again, I've said this 1,000 times. I don't necessarily believe Alabama has more rich boosters than Northwestern. I don't believe they do.
They don't.
But Alabama's got boosters who care about have rich people who their number one priority is funding that football program when the Northwestern rich people are trying to cure cancer.
Right.
I'm not putting down Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, Oklahoma. They're wonderful fans, but I think the passion of the stupid rich people and how important it is for them to give that money to keep their school on top is like nothing else there. Nothing else in American sport.
Well,
really.
Again, if it all came down to alumni dollars, Harvard would never lose a football game.
That's exactly right. But the passion of where to spend it exists with the football power. Let's take a break. I haven't had headlines in an hour and a half.
Let's do it.
Let's do headlines. Hayes, headlines are next. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Gather around.
It's Hayes's Headlines, presented by Harrell & Harrell. Don't settle for less than you deserve. Hear all about it. Here's Hayes Carline.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Frank Frangie, J.J. LaSelva. I am Hayes Carline. Thank you to our friends at Harrell & Harrell. You can give them a call if you need them at 251-1111. All right, Frank, we're going to dive right back into this Aiyuk trade. Daniel Jeremiah tweeted out earlier today that he believes it is Colts versus Jags for Brandon Aiyuk. I got to say, I think that's bad news for the Jags if that's the case.
Yeah, you think if if the Jags, I don't know if the Jags are really in play. I saw the Jeremiah tweet too, and boy, it got my attention. But I don't know if he's guessing or if he. It sounds like, in fairness to him, he's not misrepresenting it. He's not saying I'm hearing the Colts and the Jags. What he did is he said, I'm doing
the math.
Something
like the two he keeps coming back to.
Right. I do the math, and who does it make sense for, and who's got the equity, and who. And so I think it's more of that. So I'm still not convinced the Jags are in play here, but I sure would like it. I'm telling you, I might give up the one for him. If I could, now you got to pay him.
Right.
Yeah, so I'd have to see what my salary cap looks like, not just now, but down the road. But if I thought financially I could make it work, what is he, 25, 26?
I think he's, this will be year 26. He just turned 26 in March.
I got to tell you, man, if I could afford him, and now's my clearly my window. I might give up 17.
Yeah, and that would probably get it done because I think that
I would think that would get it done.
I would imagine the Colts are hoping. Why I think it's good news for the Colts if it's Colts Jags is
if he's
I'd be surprised if the Jags give up 17.
Right.
So now you're looking at probably second round and into the future. And again, the Colts are just ahead of the Jags in the pecking order. So if you're the 49ers. You know, the Jags are going to have to beat the Colts, and that might make it difficult because the Colts have more of a pole position in this year's draft. All right, we've been doing Jaguars draft X Factor this week. We've had a lot of fun with that. We're going to do two athletes today because neither one of these guys went in the media mock, and I think absolutely they have a chance to be selected at 17 if they're there. I don't think there's a good chance that one of them definitely won't be, and we'll start with him. Washington left tackle Troy Fa'utanu, 29 starts at left tackle. He's had two starts at left guard. And again, the beauty of Fa'utanu's game is he really could play any of the five positions. So a name to watch.
Yeah, it is. Offensive line doesn't move the needle much for me high in the draft because I think they like what they've got there. It's not perfect. And if Mitch Morse has dropped off at all, it's not perfect at all. But I found myself, hey, so focused on cornerback one, receiver edge tied for two. So offensive line would surprise me a bit.
Yeah, when you look at the contracts of that room, it's hard to see any of those guys getting supplanted.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And so
correct.
You'd be drafting a guy with the idea that he's pretty much going to sit unless you have an injury. But there is a second offensive lineman that I want to highlight here, Oregon State right tackle Talisa Fuaga, 25 starts at right tackle. He was the top offensive tackle at the Senior Bowl. He is somebody else that could play guard. So, again, a couple names to watch out for, guys that did not go in the media mock draft, but I would expect that they will go Thursday.
Yeah, and he's right tackle, right guard type guy, a very physical player.
Bob McGinn continued his draft coverage. Again, you can find it on the Go Long. It's sensational. He's been doing this for 40 years. He knows everybody, and he does a good job with it. And Bob McGinn sets it up is he's for the corners and secondary is what he released today. He does a position each day. So it's 17 personnel men weighing in and voting 1 through 5 on the top corners. And I thought this was interesting. Terrion Arnold finished in first place with 66 points and had 7 of the 17 first place votes. Quinyon Mitchell, 3 first place votes and 63 total points. So very close to Arnold. Then there was a drop off. Clemson's Nate Wiggins, 2 first place votes, but just 47 points. So clearly Arnold and Mitchell are the cream of the crop, according to these 17 scouts.
I would take Arnold ahead of Mitchell. Because, and I've stood true to this, and this is an SEC snobbery, but I do believe now more than ever, because the difference in how they play in the best college programs isn't that different than the NFL anymore, I'd rather have a guy that has spent his career playing against LSU and Georgia than a guy that has spent his career playing whoever Toledo plays. So if it was me, I would take if 17's up, the Jags are on the clock, and Arnold and Mitchell are both there, and I haven't assessed them and graded them the way the teams do, I would take Arnold over Mitchell for that reason.
I tell you, the Detroit Lions are really have something going in terms of how they're drafting, developing, and then paying, rewarding their core players. They announced two huge deals today. Receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown, a four-year, $120 million deal with $77 million guaranteed. That's probably what a Brandon Ayuk deal would look like. Just give a dollar more, and that's probably what you're looking at there for Jaguar fans that are intrigued to get him. Penei Sewell also gets paid, the other young Lions offensive star. 4 years, $112 million is his extension. So two huge deals for the Detroit Lions, but great moves for Detroit. It actually looks like for the first time in my life, the Detroit Lions may actually know what they're doing, Frank.
Well, here's the bottom line. They're in their window. They know they're in their window now. They were 12-5 last year, 9-8 the year before. Not unlike the Jags, except they finished better last year. Up until five games left, they had identical records. Let me give the Lions going into last year, before 2 years ago. 3-13, 5-11, 3-12, 6-10, 9-7, 7-9, 7-9, 4-12, 11-5, 6-10, 2-14, 0-16, 7-9, 3-13. You get the point.
Yeah.
They're never any good. All of a sudden, they found something. They got the right head coach. They got a really good young offensive coordinator. They found the right personnel. We talk about how the Jags are in their window. Well, if you've ever been in a window, the Lions are in that window now. Go for it. Go for it when you're there and you've almost never been there. So give them credit.
Particularly if Jared Goff can continue to play, right. I think, kind of above his head.
I agree.
As he's done there. But to his credit, he's really been he's gone from trade afterthought to really a star player for the Lions. Cincinnati picks up the fifth-year option on Ja'Marr Chase. No surprise there, but just a reminder, we're still waiting to hear on the Jaguars. Obviously, Trevor will get his fifth year picked up. Travis Etienne, I think, gets it picked up, but it's not as clear.
I do, too. I think Travis Etienne's a good player. I think you pick it up, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. And obviously, he picked Ja'Marr Chase up. He's one of the best receivers in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Baltimore made, I thought, a kind of an interesting extension today, extending receiver Rashad Bateman, who has played well when he's been healthy. But Frankie never is.
And he did not. I'm surprised by it, too. He didn't impact the league. I mean, the Ravens got a rookie from Boston College named Zay Flowers that nobody knew much about and clearly impacted them more in 1 year than Rashad Bateman has his entire team time there. I'm surprised as well.
Absolutely. Getting to college football, Reggie Bush gets his Heisman Trophy back after 14 years as the sport has greatly changed.
Yeah, they had the trust met around here, as a matter of fact. A big meeting and agreed to do it. I always had some problems with him losing it. I know he broke the rules. I'm not so sure in the history of the Heisman, he's the first person that ever did it. I know a lot of people that won Heismans wanted him to get it back, and I'm glad he did.
Bill Belichick is going to be a regular on the Manning cast this upcoming football season. I've never really embraced the Manning cast. I still like watching the game.
Same here.
But Belichick might get me to tune in if it's the right kind of Belichick. If they're talking about the game, I'll be fascinated.
Yeah.
If they're talking about his fishing trip, I could care less.
Yeah, I think he'll be funny. I think there's some funny in there that you don't realize. I'm the same way. It's funny you said that about the Manning cast. I'm the same way you are in that. What I like best about the Manning cast is to go on social media the next day and find the funny lines. But during the game, I want to watch Buck and Aikman. So I doubt very seriously that I will spend much time during the meat of the game, when the game's going on. I rarely – and by the way, I think they're both – I'm big fans of both guys. I think they're both hilarious. I think Peyton Manning is one of the big media stars that used to be in sports in our lifetime. But when the game's going on, I want – and you got Buck and Aikman calling the game. When the game's going on, I'm going to watch the game.
ESPN has a really cool feature in terms of Major League Baseball, asking pitchers about what's going on with the elbow injuries. Yeah. Pretty fascinating stuff.
Did you read the whole story? I read the whole story. They can talk about it. They can talk about the pitch clock and being in a hurry, not having the sticky stuff, the seams being higher. Don't overthink this, because everything's velocity now. It's not pacing. It's not timing. Everything's velocity. The one thing it said in there, and I know you saw this, that resonated, is every one of them are throwing 100. And so every one of these guys are throwing 100. It's one of the biggest pet peeves I have. If a high percentage of the stars in your sport are needing a major reconstructive surgery early in their careers, we're doing something wrong. You've heard me now. I've screamed to the mountaintops on this. I think we're doing some stuff wrong.
Yeah, it was interesting, but I'm with you. There weren't a lot of, I'd say, answers given.
Right.
It was just sort of, Right. Yeah, this is what's happening. And there was some complaining about the pitch clock, but that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It's not why all of a sudden this is happening, because guys are throwing as hard as they can with no rest for the weary. And by the way, they're all going to keep blowing their arms.
Right. No doubt about it. We mentioned this earlier, but in the world of golf, Tiger and Rory McIlroy getting huge loyalty bonuses from the PGA Tour now that money, their new investment money, is kicking in. Reportedly, Tiger Woods getting $100 million, Rory McIlroy getting $50
million. It's a microcosm of the story we told earlier. LIV looked like it had the tour over a barrel, and the tour was panicking and going to merge. That's the way I read it. And then instead, the tour went out and got a $1 billion-plus investment. All of a sudden, it had the heritage and integrity and tradition that LIV doesn't have, and now has the money that LIV has, or certainly closer to it. And all of a sudden, I think the leverage is completely flipped. I think now LIV is panicking a little bit, and that is shown by the fact that here's how much money we have. We can give this to Tiger and this to Rory.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah. Flashback time. On this date in 1998,
yes,
George Costanza tried to save his Frogger record.
I'm buying the Frogger machine. Now the torch will burn forever.
Fabulous. See, now you're really doing something.
Zup, you want to come down to Mario's Pizza with me and help me pick up the Frogger?
Hey, how are you going to keep the machine plugged in while you move it?
What?
Once you unplug the machine, all the scores will be erased.
I can do this.
By yourself?
Jerry, I've been preparing for this moment my entire life.
Game over.
Alas, George Costanza was not able to keep the Frogger
record. God bless George.
As the 18-wheeler barreled over the machine, as George could not navigate the curb.
God bless George.
Great job, JJ, cutting that up for us. And we are going to get out of here on this note. On 1989, Tom Petty released his first solo album, Full Moon Fever. It went platinum 5 times over, with hits like Free Fallin', I Won't Back Down, and Running Down a Dream.
Wow.
Free Fallin', an iconic American song.
How about that album? You think that album is any good?
Unbelievable.
You think that guy announced his entry into the rock world with that? It's a great, great Tom Petty. Great work on Headlines. That was absolutely fantastic. We have one segment to go. We'll be back after this on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM. It's a long
day living in receipt. Doors, please. Time now for the SkyLife Elite Take Flight Moment of the Week. SkyLife Elite, North Florida's premier private air charter.
2-point game. Ball knocked loose. And Maxi gets knocked down. Hart takes it away. Out top to DiVincenzo. His shot won't go. Hartenstein the rebound. Hartenstein gets it out to Ananobi. DiVincenzo a three. Bang! Bang! Knicks take a 1-point lead with 13 seconds remaining.
Murray makes a move. There's a
the Nuggets have won!
Doncic, 5 to shoot. Against Harden, Doncic lines it up. It goes!
Well done, JJ. It's time to give the NBA some love. Some fantastic action in the association over the last couple of days made for a perfect Take Flight moment from our friends at SkyLife Elite. Again, if you're tired of canceled flights, unruly passengers, and layovers, give our friends at SkyLife Elite a call to learn more about private charter flights. You can call them at 490-9332. Find them at flyskylife.com as well, or on social media. North Florida's premier private air charter.
And you can afford it. That's the thing I tell people.
I think we're actually going to go to Vegas.
Yeah.
and with a group of friends.
Yeah, and charter it. Yeah, and people don't realize you can get a bunch of friends together.
So Skyly Fleet, if you're listening, I'm getting ready to email you asking for a quote.
That's exactly right. So you can do that, folks. You really can. Boy, Mike Breen's good. You know that?
He is good.
Mike Breen's good.
Double bang.
Yeah, he went double bang on that.
I think NBA tweeted it out. There was only 6 other times in the history of Mike Breen that he's done the double bang.
Is that right? Yes. I did not know that. I didn't know that, but
that's research.
DiVincenzo, by the way, had 2 cracks at it. Mm-hmm. You know that was what the double bang was. But I was watching that one. I wasn't up for the I didn't see the Luka shot, and I wasn't up for the Murray shot. But I was watching the DiVincenzo shot. It was an amazing. Yeah, the association's getting going. That's good stuff.
It is. JJ, we got Heat Celtics tonight.
Yes.
Game 2. Are the Heat gonna provide any resistance?
I doubt it.
That's a sweep.
Okay. Yeah, that's a sweep. And then tonight we have the Pelicans OKC, which I expected OKC to run away with the series, but Pelicans played really tough in Game 1, so that'll be another one to watch. 9:30.
You're locked in. You stay up late. You're a late night guy.
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely. It's difficult, more difficult now that I'm married. But we got 2 TVs.
Yeah.
She goes to bed earlier than I do.
Yeah, it works out. Your age, I probably stayed up late. I can't stay up at all. Late game. I'm a big baseball guy, obviously, JJ. So I used to love. I was same thing. Suzanne would go to bed earlier. And I would stay up for that Twins Angels game, and I loved it. I mean, I did it forever.
I love West Coast baseball,
but
man.
I can't. I got nothing now.
Just me by myself.
Yeah, me. That's the way I was forever. But now at 10:30,
I've got nothing.
I'm fading. I'm in a deep fade at 10:30. Are you surprised the Steelers didn't pick up the option on Justin Fields?
No, because it's just if he does get hurt,
yeah,
and you're now right on the hook for $20-something million,
or if he doesn't play,
yeah,
if you re-sign Russ.
Yeah, you know. I got it that they didn't. I still think they're going to be glad that they made that trade. I mean, I think the way the season's going to play out is Fields will end up playing more than Wilson.
Do you?
And I don't even think Wilson will be bad. I just think maybe he gets hurt. You know, seasons can change on a dime. But my guess is the Fields is going to end up being a Steeler more than just 1 year.
That to me is a guy that followed those Steelers all those years. Is one of the most bizarre stories that this team that never wanted flashy at quarterback or anywhere. Roethlisberger was from Miami of Ohio, was anything. He was a really good player, but he was kind of a blue collar guy. And Terry Bradshaw was the ultimate Steeler, and he's from Louisiana, the ultimate blue collar guy. And they had 3 guys, none of them any good, by the way, but Pickett and Trubisky and Mason Rudolph were all terrible. But you rarely see a team wipe out all 3 guys and then go get 2 guys who everybody's talking about.
Right.
That's just not their way. They get 2 guys that the whole league was, for good and bad reasons, was talking about Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. That's so not the way you would expect. I'm real intrigued to see what it becomes.
Do you think they could be in the market for Ayuk? Because I saw somebody mention Cortland Sutton, and I wouldn't get Sutton. He's too much like Pickens.
They've clearly, when they went out and got Russ Wilson, and then Fields too, they too think they're in one of those windows. And they're going to try and win right away. So I can see them doing something. You know, they got Van Jefferson, who's a pretty good player. And they got Pickens, who might be a star. They like the tight end, Freiermuth. So, I think there's a chance they could go get one more piece. It wouldn't surprise me if they do. Now, do they give up all the equity he's going to cost? I got to tell you, I'd love it if Ayuk wound up here. I don't know if the Jags are even in play. One day I'll ask.
Can you imagine if the Jaguars are on the clock at 17 and all of a sudden you see the San Francisco logo pop up tomorrow night?
Wouldn't that be
awesome?
Because
you'll know immediately.
Wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah. I'd love to see it. All right, I will be with you tomorrow. You and Hack have it tomorrow.
Yes, I'll see you Friday.
Tomorrow night, Tony Buscelli, Jeff Lagerman, and I have the network show from 8 to midnight. Hayes and Hacker have this show. I'll be back in with Hayes on Friday. Don't go anywhere. Rick Ballew is next. This is 1010XL at 92.5.